Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation, the only man banned from entering Britain in the American media. Even though Fox News says they never heard of me. It just shows you how deeply they are involved in world affairs. Play the music. What do you care about me? Anyway, it's open mic to Mike Friday on the Savage Nation. Want to hear the horn, then I'll talk. They go to the bass, to the alto sax. Listen to what's coming in music. It is Rock and Roll Friday, the Savage Nation. Open mic to Mike. No, I want to hear the horn. I'm not stopping until I hear that horn. I'm going to hold on until I hear the horn. Comes right now. Watch when he breaks into the sack. Oh! When I first heard that horn at age 13, and I was this straight white kid in Queens, it changed my life. That horn did for me what Kerouac's On the Road did for me later on. Welcome to the Savage Nation. And what I do for you today. I'm the equivalent of that horn on talk radio for most of America. I'm telling you, I mean, after it's not like the other guys can't play music. They can, but they can't play the horn that way, right? So since today is Friday and we know that Obama has launched yet another war, I think it's war four now. You didn't hear about that, huh? You were busy watching the vermin in the gutters of Wall Street and wherever.
Oh, bring down capitalism, but bring a sandwich at the same time. And by the way, you got a room for me, a free room? Bring down capitalism, yeah. I want my mortgage paid for and my car and my tuition, yeah.
See, now, if I were mayor, there'd be hoses out, hoses and nightsticks at this point already. But because we have nobody in charge of anything, they're hosing us down. It's open mic to Mike, whatever you want me to do. Now, you do know Obama, I'm telling you, started another war in Africa. He sent troops to Africa. Not a lot. I mean, only 100. Now, we heard they sent 100 troops. That means there's more than that, okay? But there's no authorization from Congress. No discussion with the American people. Just King Obama decides to send your husband, who did he send to Africa for the sake of Africans? Now, I want to ask you something, since all of you know that anybody who criticizes Obama is doing it only because we're racists, not because he's verifiably the worst president in American history. What if a white conservative male who was already mired in two wars, three actually, if you add Libya, because the troops haven't come home yet, suddenly launched another war, a fourth war? Do you think that the New York Times or the other outlets of the socialist left would have anything to say? Yeah, you know they would. But here's Obama in the middle of the night, he decides to send troops to Africa. Now, irrespective of whether this guy is a bad guy who they're trying to take out or not, I thought that in a participatory democracy, there was a representative government. Obama sends 100 U.S. troops to Uganda to help combat Lord's Resistance Army. I have another question. Lord's Resistance Army, are they Christians and are they fighting Muslims? And has Obama launched this war so that we are now Hessians for the Muslims fighting the Christians? I can't find anything on this. Why are we sending troops to Africa to begin with. Let's say the Lord's Resistance Army is a certifiably bad group, and the opposition is a certifiably good group, which I doubt in Africa. I don't think it's as clear as that. What I want to know is, though, where does the president have the authority to do this? The answer is, and this is going to shock you, I got your attention, right? The answer is, the Congress passed the, quote, Lord's Resistance Army Disarmament and Northern Uganda Recovery Act in the middle of the night on May 24th, 2010, without any discussion. The Congress voted for this action without your knowledge on May 24th, 2010. And so, therefore, this war act passed both houses of Congress with overwhelming support on May 10th, 2010, with language that included, quote, providing political, economic, military, and intelligence support now for viable multilateral efforts to protect civilians from the Lord's Resistance Army. Now, I don't know about any multilateral part of it. I don't suppose the Greeks have sent anyone. Do you think the Greeks have sent an army in there, or you think the French have sent any French troops in? I doubt it. I suspect there's another Nobel Peace Prize in this. I mean, I know that we don't meddle in other nations' affairs. It only applies if Obama wants to meddle in other nations' affairs, and then it's not meddling. It seems that he's again bowed to pressure from his UN masters, like he did in the war for European oil supplies in Libya. I'll bet no one out there knows Obama's actually a warmonger, and I can't understand why the liberals are not saying anything. So the question is, who are these people? Who in the world is he backing? Who in the world is he backing? We kept hearing that Bush had two illegal wars, illegal Bush wars, how Bush rushed to war, even though it took him 2 years. Then he got congressional approval, and then he got support from the UN. And yet Obama violates the Constitution on a daily basis with his truly illegal wars, and not a word. It's not about hypocrisy. It's insanity. Now, the next question is, what can you do about it? Nothing. Because you don't live in a participatory democracy, and you don't want to hear about this. So open mic to Mike. If you'd rather I read sex scenes between Jack Hatfield and various and sundry lady characters, you can call me. You know, I did that yesterday, and I don't know whether the effect was good, bad, or indifferent. Because I have a suspicion that people out there are bored of politics. I don't really know. I mean, there's only so much you can take. Obviously, the show is primarily political in nature. There's no question about it, particularly when you have communists on the march in America and around the world and an outright Marxist in the White House. Of course, it's a political show. But I do it 5 days a week, and once in a while I have to break it up, you know. Interestingly enough, my producer, Beowulf, was listening to the, or looked on the internet, and a student at NYU has a radio station, WNYU, interviewed some hack from a Fox News named Lise Wheel. I don't know what her name is or what she does. Listen to clip two.
I want to talk about one last topic. It's a little off topic, but I am a fan of the radio host Michael Savage. Have you heard of him?
Sure, of course.
Okay. And so he was banned from entering England.
Huh, why?
Well, because they said that his comments would incite inter-community violence.
Huh.
Right.
I had not heard that.
And what the thing about it is that no one has really covered this issue. And I know that he's not really welcome on Fox News and stuff like that. But I was curious what your thoughts would be. I thought, you know, you would know about this case. But it just seems like such a big issue that someone is being banned from a first world country because of freedom of speech.
Right.
England,
right.
I guess, doesn't technically have that.
No, the First Amendment. They don't have the First Amendment.
So now this interviewer, great guy, Ian Nelson, he's welcome to call the Savage Nation. He says he's a fan, and he got this lady Liz something on NYU radio. And then he asks her, why hasn't Fox covered it? And she says, whoa, of course I heard of him, but I don't know nothing about no England stuff. Now that's, of course, because Fox is 19% owned by a Saudi prince. That's number one. The fact is, if she doesn't know that, it's an embarrassment for her, not for me. After all, I talk about it for the last 3 years. It's been all over the internet. I wrote a book on it. I have a best-selling novel about it. I mean, who is she kidding? But listen to what this Liz person says in the next clip.
No, I had not heard that, and I don't know Mr. Savage. I just know that he is a very well-known radio show host.
All right, thanks, Liz. She's probably a nice lady. I'm not going to bash her. I like her voice. She has a very, very, very seductive voice. She's perfect for Fox News. All style and no substance. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'll always want you. Because my heart is true. Come, come, come closer. And I'll tell you all the ABC.
I so don't want to work today. I got spring fever and it's the autumn. I don't know what to do with myself. I have spring fever early in the year. Or is it late in the year? I should have had spring fever last April. I didn't have spring fever. I had legal fever last... When I should have had spring fever, I had legal fever fighting on all fronts. I mean, my life is a nightmare of courts and lawyers. They make everything worse, incidentally. Nothing can be resolved. When you get a lawyer involved, nothing gets resolved. What are you going to do about it? It's a nation of laws, right? Look at what we have in the White House. And now, I don't know, it's like very hot here. Ugh, we got like a, you know, Indian summer, I mean Native American summer, whatever. So the other night I threw the top down in the car and took a ride with Teddy. It was so nice to do what normal people do. I felt so normal. Dark road, light late at night. It was really amazing. Oh, here we got a good woman calling, wants the love scene again. Sacramento, Paula, welcome to Savage Nation. I want to hear what you got to say.
I just want to say that I love that scene that you read yesterday, and I would love to meet Jack Hatfield to be my lover.
Now wait a minute, lady.
What?
Now wait a minute, lady. Does your husband know you made this call?
I'm divorced.
Now wait a minute. Who's laughing in the background with you?
That's me. I'm alone in my car waiting for my daughter to get out of school right now.
So you're allowed to call about the love scene before your daughter gets in the car?
Yeah, she'll be coming down the hill from her school like any minute now, so I'm sneaking this in.
So we better hurry up and finish this conversation quickly. Before your daughter busts you. So let me ask you something, Paula. Have you read Abusive Power, or you heard me reading that scene on the air?
No, I heard you read it on the air. I'd love to get the book. I'm just, like, so broke right now because I'm unemployed.
Oh, okay. Well, you have an early Halloween gift on the way.
It's coming
out to you right now. And we will not give out your phone number on the air because if people hear that you want to meet Jack Hatfield and I ever told you how to meet you, forget about it. You'd have 100,000 men beating a path to your door.
Fantastic.
Well, I know you live in Sacramento. I understand that. That's why your comment is so apt.
I actually live in Redding, California, and it's pretty the pickings are pretty slim up here. Okay.
But isn't Redding, not to be, you know, derogatory, but isn't Redding the home of the redneck?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I was a Bay Area transplant. I moved up here 10 years ago, and I'm still going through a little bit of culture shock.
Oh, so like when you go in and ask for a cappuccino, they look at you like you're weird, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in other words, they just have coffee black. That's all.
Yeah, but quite frankly, I like my coffee black. I like my whiskey neat, you know, so I'm in my
Wait a minute. So you belong in Redding?
I guess so, in kind of a weird way, yeah.
You see that? Look, keep on laughing, read Abusive Power, and get back to me, and let me know what you think of it, okay?
I would love to. I'm looking forward
All right.
to it. Thank you.
Thank you. It's on the way out to you. You see that? Don't think. We now have 23 women listeners from around America on the Savage Nation. Although I'm the second most popular talk show host in the world, in America, which would make it the world, on the Internet. Did you know that? I got to clear the air on that for a minute. It came out 2 weeks ago that my show was the number two with a 10.6 share on streaming. In other words, where people listen to the show either on the Internet or on a cell phone, right? And that Rush is number one. Now, the people who don't like me, which is a big list of people, said, big deal. The reason Savage is number two is because he's not heard in so many cities, so people have to listen to him on the Internet. Now, on the face of it, that sounds like it's reasonable, but think about this for a moment. Rush is heard in every city in America. He's heard on every ABC station. He's heard nationally. He's number one. So how does it figure that I'm number two because I'm not heard? That doesn't make sense. That's rubbish. The reason I'm listened to on the web is twofold. One is because that's a much younger demographic. You got to understand that. Most older people listen to radio on the radio. They don't go to the web. They don't listen on cell phones. It's a younger person access point, the web. The web is used for radio by younger people. So I would say that I skew much younger than most old white guys in talk radio. And there's a reason for it, because they were looking for, I don't know what they're, I know what they're looking for. They wanted a father to tell them like it is. They wanted someone to speak sort of real to them instead of this double talk they had all their life, the Dr. Spock, everything's okay. It's not that their father was a bad guy. It's not that their teachers were bad. It's not that their priest was bad. It's not that their doctor was bad. It's that people either didn't know how or they were afraid to be as blunt as I am with regard to what's going on around them. And a lot of young people are bewildered by it all. I'm not really bewildered. I actually see things exactly as they are. I'm rarely wrong about international politics. I don't think I've ever been wrong internationally. I made a few bad calls nationally. I don't even remember them, one or two. In terms of my personal life, it's a mess. In terms of my personal life, it's like everyone else's. You know what I'm saying? In other words, that's the way it is. I mean, in real life, on an everyday life basis, I have the same problem as everybody else does because I'm just like you. I don't pretend to be otherwise. But in terms of having the analytical abilities that I have, nobody can match me in talk radio. Nobody. And there are phenomenal people writing articles, making commentary. They're awesome. But they can't do what I do, which is do this every day, day in and day out, 5 days a week for 18 years or 16 years or whatever it is. Okay? They can't do it. You try it. You try it for 3 hours one day. 1-800-449-8255. There are more stories coming up. And again, if you were offended by yesterday's reading of the sex scene between Jack, please don't call the show. Oh, there's one caller. Keep Richard on. He'd rather hear the Bible rather than Jack making love to somebody in the book. All right. Okay. But remember, Jack is single and Sarah was single. They're not cheating on anybody. Aren't they allowed to have a little fun? After all the death around them, they can't lay down with each other.
Savage.
So we're at war again, another war now on another continent. This time, well, you could say Libya. We started the African campaigns in Libya. Not we, I mean Obama. And now he's going into sub-Saharan Africa in order to complete the picture. I guess Soros must have some interests in Uganda that he needed the president of Soros Enterprises to use our boys as Hessians for. Just shocking. Shocking how he gets away with this stuff. Another war now in Africa? Oh, it's only 100 men. But listen to how Vietnam started. It was 100 advisors, remember? The left screamed bloody murder. No more advisors. No more advisors. No more war. But as I said for years, if the bomb has a D on it, it's a good bomb to the libs. Any bomb with an R on it is an evil bomb. Any bomb with a D on it is a sacred bomb, a saintly bomb, a good bomb. Any bullet with a D on it is a good bullet. Any bullet with an R on it, and so forth and so on. Fill in the blanks yourself. 1-800-449-82. It's Friday. Lighten up. Let it go. Let me read the book. Let me talk about Teddy. No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to talk about Teddy. He's in the book under Eddie. I fictionalized most of the book, but Eddie is Teddy. I'm going to tell you right now, even though all characters, none of the characters resemble anybody in life, anybody, nobody, except Eddie is Teddy. Because he can't sue. What if a National Lawyers Guild lawyer who... Hey, did you see the scene in New York with the vermin who are trying to provoke the police as best they can? So they get the fat-mouthed commie lawyers from Columbia and NYU from the National Lawyers Guild. They're lawyers like my dog is a lawyer. Lawyer. Remember Pineapple Face? She's in jail for helping a terrorist in National Lawyers Guild. Yeah, Lynn Stewart, sorry. Who did I say? What Stewart? Who's Lynn Sam? Oh, Lynn, I'm sorry. Sorry, Lynn. I'm sorry, Lynn. Didn't mean that. So they arrested... So the National Lawyers Guild is a well-known communist lawyers front group, right? They hate America with a passion. They hate democracy with a passion. So you got the vermin occupying Wall Street, so to speak. So you got lawyers. They run out. One of them threw himself in the gutter under a police scooter. And before his fat behind hit the pavement, he was screaming, "Police brutality! Police brutality!" You could see his mouth open. We got the picture from the New York Post. Before the fat mouth hit the ground, the mouth was screaming police brutality, and he had the cell phone camera out already. New York, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, thank you. Live long and prosper. I hope you broadcast till you're 95 so you can verbally assault these liberals for many years to come. But, Michael, listen, President Obama has taken apart the watch, as you've always indicated. Everything is falling apart, but he is nailing some of these bad people in the world like Alaki and Osama bin Laden. Is it possible that the troops are warming up in the bullpen and the only thing that can save his presidency would be to take down the Hitler of Iran, Ahmadinejad?
Yes, yes, he'll do that next October at the latest, because that will be his October surprise to get reelected. As you well know, war always works for an unpopular president. Look what it did for Reagan and look what it did for a Bush. At the lowest points of their presidency, there was nothing like a war to bring the people behind them. You know that that always works.
So we can save Israel.
I mean, shall I go back to how about the Maine, the battleship Maine? Do you know, remember that one?
No.
You see, you don't even remember the battleship Maine. I wasn't alive at the time, but many presidents have used wars to steam up the population and gather them behind them. It's worked tremendously. Look what it did for Lincoln. His presidency was in the toilet until the Civil War.
So maybe we can take down our...
Look up the Maine. And by the way, look at what it did for the Hearst Newspaper Corporation, a fake sinking of a battleship. So in other words, presidents have always used wars to bolster their presidency when they're in trouble. And since Obama's presidency is sinking fast, yeah, there's a high likelihood. I'm not a betting man, but I would bet that there's going to be an action against Iran. But right now, I read on the Israeli website, Debka, that the U.S. is trying to get Israel to take out Iran's navy in the interim. Did you read that yet?
I've heard that, Michael. Joel wrote...
See, they want Israel to become the front man for this. They're getting terrified of Iran's machinations because Iran is not afraid of us anymore. They have provoked us continuously. They have provoked us for years and nothing's happened to them. The Hitler of Iran comes to New York and basically does anything he wants, verbally, anything he wants, and nothing happens. He figures, screw them, they're a pitiful giant. America's a pitiful, helpless giant run by such corrupt, fat old men in the Defense Department that they can do anything. That's why they're doing it. They have no fear of us.
And if Hitler gets the bomb, look out, Israel. So we got to hasten on this, Michael.
We've got to who?
We got to hurry up to get Ahmadinejad. Once he gets the bomb...
You're going to do it? You're going to put on a uniform? You're not going to do it. Not we. You're going to do it. All right, I'll send you a free copy of the book. I'm dragging. I need rock and roll. I need rock and roll today. Give me some rock and roll in the middle of the next call. Again, the same song from 1952. Futurama, the motor show. Did I tell you about my... I'll bring back a memory. All right, they want a memory for old Sav. All right, turn it off already. Here, the memory was turned on. So it's like remembrances of things past. Some people will smell chocolate and remember their past. If your name is Proust, which mine isn't. Others will remember the past if you play at the hop, which my name is Savage, so I remember. So it's early 1950s. Immigrant family. Dad was an immigrant from Russia. I'm first-generation American. I'm man-child in the promised land. You know, dead man's pants and all of that, which you all heard about and read about, right? So Dad loved cars, as I do to this day. I'm a bit of a car nut, car collector. Not a big one. In a small way, I have some pretty... I have one exotic car and some pedestrian cars, but I still love cars. I especially love the big, high-powered cars that... especially when they go past Priuses, because the Prius drivers are the worst on the road. Offensive. Everyone who drives a Prius looks like either a Larry David while cross-dressing to me, or something along those lines, or Larry David's mother. Every one of them looks either like Larry David. If you look inside a Prius, it's either someone who looks like Larry David or Larry David's cross-dressing mother. You know, that kind of thing. Nevertheless, so I love to pass them on the road because they're nasty. They cut you off. Early 1950s, Dad and I go to the auto show in New York, the Futurama, the General Motors Futurama, right? Now, in those days, the introduction of the new line of cars was such a big deal in America. It was like the Academy Awards are to the idiots of today. I could care less about the Academy Awards, but apparently a lot of people still think about it. But like, oh, the new cars are being introduced. So they would have car shows, and people would go to them. They still do, but yeah, there's no real verve. Unless you're an immigrant from Mongolia. I mean, who really goes to a car show? You know, like if you grew up in Mongolia and you came here illegally, to you, you go to a car show like we did because we were immigrants. You know, Buick, LeSabre, Buick, all the way up the line, depending upon your social, your socioeconomic level, you bought a certain car. It was amazing. They had different models of Buicks and different models of Oldsmobiles. Depending upon your economic level, you bought that car. I swear to God. Like, if your neighbor bought a Buick Roadmaster, he was as close to, I don't know, Rockefeller as you could get. Cadillac, forget about it. It was like, oh, nobody had a Mercedes in those days. Never. Never heard of them. The only Mercedes we ever saw was like newsreel photos of Hitler's SSK. Otherwise, there were no Mercedes in America in those. Honest to God, it was true. I own a Mercedes, great car. But in those, so it was like, you know, GM all the way, right? Then there was Ford. Then there was the third, well, General Motors, Ford. It was Chrysler. Chrysler was like for salesmen and people about to, and then there was the Nash, like the Nash Rambler. If you had like an uncle who was like a mission, like nothing to him, you know, he owned, like he sold ties and he got a Nash Rambler, that's all. Nothing wrong with selling ties. I mean, I buy ties. So anyway, we go to the auto show at the, like the Coliseum, the New York Coliseum, right? And all the models that were on the cars were like, they looked to me like, because we were immigrants, right? We didn't have like nice clothes or anything. And I'm wearing dead man's pants. And the models, you know, they were like six. They looked like they were 6'10" goddesses. You know, who knew what they were? They're probably the same, you know, Hollywood that they got today. Girls, you know, looking to make a buck. Didn't mean they were bad. They were generally what they were. But they were so amazing. They were like in another world. Like, who are these women? No one I knew looked. None of the women in my family looked like them. Thank God, because the women in my family were all pure. And no doubt the models at the Futurama were all like Britney Spears or Paris Hilton. Who knew? So we go to the shows and we'd see the models and it was like untouchable. And why? Because the object was to make you feel just as the woman was unreachable, so was the car. But if you were lucky enough, they would sell you one. You understand how that works? Has anything really changed? Now, I don't know, every car ad has some lunatic who looks like he's an Occupy Wall Street. I don't understand it. The schmuck guys they use in ads now on television look like they're Occupy Wall Street types. You know what I mean? All right, forget about it. I'm rambling on too much. My knuckles hurt today. What is this? Oh, here's a good call. Julie in Sacramento, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yes, so I'm having lunch today with my 70-year-old mom. Out of the blue, she says, hey, I know a book I really need for Christmas. Michael Savage's book, new book. And I couldn't tell her that I already listened to yesterday and why she wants it. She was.
Oh, you mean she heard me read the sex scene between Jack and the unknown woman, and then now she wants the book?
Yes.
Oh, my God. What's your pastor going to say when he hears about this?
Oh, I don't know. My priest, I have no idea.
He probably read it already himself.
Have I? No, I'm going to go get it.
No, I said your preacher probably. Your preacher's probably read the book already.
Oh, you think so?
Good guess. Somebody's buying it. I'm sending you a free copy for your mother. Don't read it yourself, though.
Okay.
Abuse of power goes out to you. No, it was a test I wanted to see. It was not. I didn't use one F word. There was no graphic description of bodily parts. I didn't get dirty. There's no pornography. It was straight out passionate lovemaking between my main character, Jack Hatfield, and a character. What's wrong with that? What? I don't understand it. In an age where sex scenes are so poorly written, where everybody has to revert to F words and dirty words, you know, and fake sex scenes. I mean, why do you have to write that garbage? Remember in the movies, they're always like a fan in the background and he's pushing the woman up against the wall with animal sounds. Like, I mean, that's not real. That's like something that somebody who never has sex writes a sex scene about. You know, with a fan blow. Remember in the 80s, every movie had a big fan going on in a loft. Somehow a loft made you sexy if you had a loft. And it was always against the wall with their people paying. Ah, come on. Why is there to be a wall? It's very uncomfortable leaning against the wall like that. Florida, Bob, Rob, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. This is Rob. I want to tell you that I'm a young listener, and I use internet radio, which you were talking about before. And I think the reason that I listen to you as opposed to the other radio talk show hosts is because you can relate stuff like a father figure. You know, you tell us about past stories, past experiences, and we don't really get that from other people. Like Rush just talks about politics the whole time. But you're more like a father figure. You know, you give us examples, and you're kind of someone to...
I'll tell you what the difference may be. It just dawned on me. I am a father of two grown children from one marriage, okay? I am married. And I think that unless you are a father who has been a father all your life, you can't do as complete a show as I can do. I think it's very important to be a father because you yourself... we'll find out if you're lucky enough to have a child downstream that it's a moment in your life that changes you forever. The minute you see your child being born, no matter what you were doing the minute before that, it will be, everything will change for you after that. The minute you see a pair of eyes come from your wife, hopefully, unless you're like one of the Hollywood stars who ruts like a dog and then leaves the child. The minute you see the child emerge from your wife and you look in her eyes or his eyes, the whole world changes for you. You become totally protective about that child and then suddenly about yourself and then about your nation. You suddenly come to understand that the family is the brick of civilization and that the nation is something organic and real to you if you love America as much as I do. I love America. America is beloved to me. I have not heard one candidate express love for this country. Have you?
No, I haven't.
No. Have you heard one candidate say with a true open heart, I love my nation. My nation is sacred to me. I will do anything to protect her. You haven't heard that from any of them. Fundamentally, you're never going to hear it from anybody who gets to that level, ever. So there is a difference, my friend. I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power. I hope you enjoy it. And now I want to play a special song for all the women who've been calling about the lovemaking scene in the Abuse of Power. Let's see if you can see what this scene is. This song isn't where it's from. Go ahead, guys.
Look at me. I'm as helpless.
Does anyone know this song?
As a kitten up a tree.
Yeah, you know this song. Remember the Clint Eastwood movie? I'll be right back.
I'm clinging to a cloud I can't understand.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. It's Rock and Roll Friday on the program. Now, I've told you that the anti-Semitic element of the anti-Wall Street protest movement is being hidden by the vermin in the media, especially the sick leftist vermin who only look at the jeans and who's inside them. And if they see men with tight jeans and blackberries, they get excited like the Arab Spring, which turned out to be, as I told you, the Arab Winter. Don't make any mistakes about it. It's all Soros money. And if you think I'm making it up, then spend a few minutes and educate yourself to where the money came from, who it funded, and how it's involved in the Occupy Wall Street movement. But there's a huge anti-Jewish element of the anti-Wall Street movement that your vermin in the media are not showing you. Listen to clip one.
Clip political one. Leaders are praising Occupy Wall Street.
American people are now occupying Wall Street. Do you support them?
Well, I support the message.
I think it expresses the frustrations that the American people feel.
I'm with them emotionally, viscerally, in my bones. I know they're right.
What is happening at the Occupy Wall Street protest?
Jews control Wall Street.
You're a bum, Jew.
The small ethnic Jewish population in this country, they have a firm grip on America's media, finances.
You got the money. That's why you're fighting, a Jewish man. You can't even speak English. Are you Israeli? Go back to Israel.
Why are our leaders turning a blind eye to anti-Semitic, anti-Israel attacks? Tell President Obama and Leader Pelosi to stand up to the mob. Hate is not an American value.
Well, the ad goes only so far. What you should be knowing, you should know, is that President Obama and Pelosi are the mob. How could they stand up to the mob when they are the mob? They're the ones behind it. They're young. It's an organic movement. They're young. Remember Pelosi glorifying them? What are you talking about? They are the mob. They want this to go on so no one looks at what they're doing. What are you talking about? Why do you think I'm reading love scenes from Abuse of Power? I can't take it anymore. You know who's in the streets. You know that the leadership in this country is non-existent. Now, I got to warn you how dangerous this is. These are the street communists that are acting up around the world, and there's no counter-protests. They have to be stopped by the police in America, and they have to be stopped right away, and I will tell you why. Unless these street rats are stopped right away from destroying cities, disrupting traffic, stopping cars, stopping buses, stopping trains, stopping ambulances, and causing economic havoc in this country, what is liable to happen is what happened in the Weimar Republic in Germany. And that was this. You don't know this because most of you have a twisted educational background. Germany was in economic turmoil after World War I. The communists were trying to take over the country. They did exactly what the Occupy Wall Street crowd is doing, but worse. They were violent. They were beating people up. They were wrecking store windows. They were attacking police. A spontaneous group of Germans arose called the Nazi Party and got into pitched battles with the communists, and it led to the emergence of Adolf Hitler. I am terrified that unless the authorities step in and stop these street rats from causing any more havoc, we are going to see skinheads, Nazis, and other individuals of that variety emerge and get into pitched battles with the street communists, which will lead to the emergence of a radical leader in America on the order of Adolf Hitler. Mark my words. You may not even understand history, but I do, and I'll remind you of something else. Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. Santayana.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears feel like rain. Ain't that a shame?
The end is near. The end is near. The end is near. This way to the egress. The end is near. This way to the egress. I've heard America is going to end any day now, ever since I've been born. Somehow it hasn't ended yet. I mean, yes, we have a naked Marxist in the White House, but we are experimenting with communism in America. We're trying it on for flavor, and we're seeing that it failed as it failed everywhere else. We're seeing just as communism failed in the ex-Soviet Union, wherever it's been tried, it's been a scythe like a Black Death. And now we've tried it on. We tried it on in 2008 with a stealth commie, Barack Obama, surrounded by czars. There were more czars under Obama than there have been in the Soviet Union since it was founded as Russia. And we see what it's led to. Massive unemployment, skyrocketing inflation, one war after another, deceit, favoritism, private deals for his cronies, one thing after another. We've never seen a meltdown in America like this, but I think just in time, America will come to its senses and realize that communism, when we tried it in 2008, didn't work. Obamacare, as you well know, took a body blow today when a principal component of Obamacare was basically abandoned by the Dems because it was unsupportable, as we told you it was. I told you in Trickle Up Poverty when I wrote it that Obamacare was unconstitutional. I based upon it upon previous cases. And now we find that it's unsupportable economically, as we all knew. That's why Pelosi was behind it. Anything that's not supportable economically, Pelosi gets excited over. Any, you get the picture, right? So where is the story? Euro-socialists and Obama administration defeated on key provision in health care law. That's my headline from the Associated Press. My headline's better than theirs, but their article is excellent. Their article says Obama pulls plug on part of health overhaul law. Just threw it out. A long-term care insurance plan, dogged from the beginning by doubts over its financial solvency, it's over. Over, finished. And many of the leftist groups that wanted this are screaming bloody murder. The group called, it was known as CLASS, C-L-A-S-S, the Community Living Assistance Services, and supported the program. It was a long-standing priority of the late Massachusetts Democratic Senator Edward M. Kennedy. And it couldn't be supported economically. And so, therefore, it was today given a death sentence. It's over. And consequently, Kennedy's original idea is now dead. Reason? Because nobody could afford it. AARP, of course, is very sad today because AARP is wrong about everything. We're disappointed that Sebelius has prematurely stated she does not see a path forward. AARP said the need for long-term care will only continue to grow. Yeah, but who's going to pay for it? The answer is no one could pay for these socialist dreams. Just as it broke the ex-Soviet Union, the socialist programs in America today are bankrupting us, along with the wars, the unnecessary wars, which have fundamentally only benefited the contractors and the special interests. And now we can see that solar is another scam. Hey, I'm all for solar energy. I'd love to see no pollution. I'm the original green. Long before the greens existed, I was saving rainforests in the South Pacific. Long before the green gonoffs got into the business, I was actually sacrificing my family's future by being an idealist, rescuing the knowledge of many of the rainforests of the South Pacific. So don't lecture to me about the environment. I'd love to see solar energy, but it's not feasible. It doesn't stop Nancy Pelosi from giving $755 million of your money to a company where her kin is on the board. And then you didn't hear about that one, didn't make it to your local paper. So we've tried communism, and we've seen what an abysmal failure it is, just that it's been a failure everywhere else. Let's go to the callers now that I've done my politics and I have a sore throat. Joanne in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor and a pleasure to talk to you. You permeate the total male I'm looking for. I don't think they exist.
Well, I don't get carried away. I mean, you know, I'm a fantasy because I'm on the radio. Ask people who know me.
Well, no, but after you read that scene from your book, Jack Hatfield, I am dying to hear the rest of it, and I can't afford your book.
Well, you just want a free book. That's okay. You're going to get one. But look, let's not get carried away here. There's only one or two lovemaking scenes in the whole book. The rest of it's a thriller. It's not a book about Jack with girls. Okay, that's enough with that already. I started something. I can't stop it. NASA buys flights on Virgin, since we're talking about sex, NASA buys flights on Virgin Galactic's private spaceship. So Obama destroyed NASA, and he privatized NASA. You say, well, that's very Republican, isn't it? So he privatizes a element that we didn't need privatized, and he socializes elements that we don't need socialized. Isn't that great? Everything is upside down. 1-800-449-8255. Las Vegas, William, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. I'd just like to report on Uganda here real quick and the reason why Obama is going in there right now. It's not about the LRA. The LRA has been around forever. If Obama was interested in going after the LRA, he would have done it when he became president if he cared about Africa, but he doesn't. It requires men like you and me to care about Africa and talk about it. But the big point here is that in 2009, Tullow Oil discovered 1.5 billion barrels reserve under Uganda. And now, in 2011, they're finally going in to exploit it because they figured at the time they'd have it finished by 2015. They've got to secure and stabilize the nation. Then they've got to sell off the rights to the oil field to all the different companies, which Total of France and I think it's the Chinese Oil Energy Corporation are some of the key buyers buying out shares of Tullow Oil to get a stock in that reserve. Because Tullow Oil is small, they need development for infrastructure, so they need capital investiture. And that's where the Chinese and the French.
Yes, but look, we went to war for oil in Iraq, and Bush lied to us when he said we would have reparations in the form of oil. Do you remember that? I recall it very distinctly. In fact, I can prove it. Bush, when he entered Iraq, said that we would have reparations in the form of oil. Instead, the war in Iraq bankrupted us emotionally, bankrupted us financially, and he never got a barrel of oil for free. Iraq owes us that oil in reparations for liberating them from Saddam Hussein. So what are we going to get out of Africa? Nothing again?
Well, no. Actually, what we're going to get out of Africa and what they've got out of Iraq is raising the commodity prices and making sure that all future petrodollar investments are made in U.S. dollars. It's about the U.S. dollar hegemony.
Wait. I don't understand. If it's a war for oil in Uganda, what are you saying? They're doing it to make sure oil does not flow?
They're doing it to make sure that oil, it's not about the energy. It's about who controls the flow of energy. It's about making sure that the dollar, that the investment dollars are denominated in U.S. dollars. It's about making sure that the right hands are pulling the oil from the ground.
But why are liberals cheering this new war in Africa? They're cheering it. They're cheering it. They're saying, ooh, it's not a war. It's sending special forces to deal with some very horrible people. It's a good thing. How come liberals are gung-ho for war when Obama calls for the war?
Because it's an easy emotional out for them. They don't go based on logic. They make their judgments based on emotion. And the LRA is an easy scapegoat because it's the Lord's army, even though it has nothing to do with the Lord. It has all to do with enslaving children, taking them from their families, and killing them.
Now, I understand that the man they're after, this guy Kony, is a Christian, a fanatical Christian. Did you know that?
That's just a cover. Anybody can claim to be Christian. Mitt Romney can claim to be Christian, but...
Wait. Let's not bash Romney in the same breath. Now, wait a minute. This guy Kony, who America wants to kill, is wanted by the International Criminal Court. But what about the people who are fighting him? Are they Muslims? I must know that for a fact before we can discuss this.
No, sir. They are communists. They are, I hate to say it, but godless communists.
So you got communists fighting Christians and we're taking the side of communists?
Naturally, of course. I mean, we're the people that went into Iraq and Afghanistan to supposedly defeat the extremists, but now they have constitutions that have Sharia law in them. We're spreading Muslim hegemony in the Middle East now with our own troops.
So we've been Hessians for a form of Shia Islam?
Sir, we've been Hessians since the Mediterranean, since the Marines went in to wipe out the Barbary Coast pirates. I mean, we were fighting for, at that time, for a New England mercantilist businessman. And, you know, our blood...
You mean like Franklin Delano Roosevelt's maternal ancestors, the Delanos, who made their fortune smuggling opium to China? You mean that family?
Oh, not just that family, but the whole history of people that...
No, I was just throwing that as an aside because people think FDR was such a great guy, but the family made their fortune the good old American way through the drug business. You know that, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
In other words, the Franklin Delano Roosevelt is a descendant of drug smugglers.
Absolutely. Many American fortunes were made that way, and, gee, they wind up in politics, and then they pull the ladder up. They make what they made legal, they make it illegal, and they pull the ladder up behind themselves.
Yeah.
Got away with
what's that saying that money that has blood on it in the first generation is washed clean by the third?
That's what I say, but you know what? It's still blood money.
I mean, the Kennedy fortune was made on bootlegging, right? I mean, everyone knows that.
And God willing, they all got what they deserved.
But why is it that the more liberal politicians are, the dirtier they are? How does that work? That the more dirty the money that they have or that they're getting, the more liberal they are. Why is that?
Because they're more willing to break rules. They're more willing to break laws. They don't have any ethical or moral compass. So they're.
I don't think that's the reason. I think it's because they know that in a liberal environment, they can get away with what they're doing. And that in a conservative environment, they're liable to be found out in plain English. And that's how they bamboozle the so-called youth into thinking that liberal is good, conservative is bad. But let's get back to Africa. U.S. sends troops to Uganda to help fight Lord's Resistance Army. The Lord's Resistance Army is a sort of charismatic, lunatic fringe Christian Christian group, mystic, eccentric Christian, etc. He's on a U.S. terrorist list. He's wanted by the International Criminal Court, right, on charges of crimes against humanity, committed in a two-decade war in northern Uganda between rebels and government soldiers. But why are we taking the other side is the issue.
It's definitely to secure the oil, petrodollars. It's about advancing the dollar hegemony. The only way to spread out all this inflation is to put more and more people in this world on the U.S. dollar. That way we can spread the pain to all the provinces of Rome. Oh, I'm sorry, the United States.
Why are we bombing another country? Why are we engaging in another war? This is kind of a serial murderer now going around the world. We went to war in Libya. We overthrew Mubarak in Egypt. Now we're going after somebody in Africa. Nobody really knows why. While one of the worst bloodthirsty murderers on the planet, Assad of Syria, gets away with killing his own people, and we have sent no troops. How does that work?
It's all favoritism. The dominoes will fall when they're flicked over, and the flicking is controlled by those that wield the power of the CIA, the DIA, and all the other alphabet soup agencies, the people that control the drones and all that other fun stuff, the stuff that we, the people, do not control, the stuff that they will use against we, the people, when the time comes.
It's terrifying, isn't it, that we have so many wars going on at once, and the street vermin are not saying one word about a new war in Africa opened up by Obama. It's shocking. I'm going to send you a gift, though, to make the world a little more entertaining place. Abuse of Power, my smash best-selling thriller. It's on the way to you. I'll be right back. A thriller from Manila.
She's the girl in the red blue jeans. She's the queen of all the teams. She's the woman that I know. She's the woman that loves me so. Say, Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't know.
Right. The Red Army faction is back in Germany. Remember the Biedermannhof gang, those of you who know anything about history. Many of you are politically newcomers, so I'm not angry at you for your naivete or your lack of knowledge. But what you're seeing in the gutters of America with the so-called young people sleeping in the streets against Wall Street is nothing but an emergence of the Red Army faction here in America, or the worse yet, the Biedermannhof gang. And I believe it's certainly the beginning of leftist terrorism. There's no question about it. And how anyone doesn't know this is only because they don't know history. So there it is. They haven't yet gone to the level of the Red Army faction or the Biedermannhof gang, but expect it, believe me, in the near future. It's going on in Germany. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. It's the Savage Nation. I have a website called michaelsavage.com, and I posted some stories on it. You know, there's some great websites out there. Mine is a relative small baby website. It only has 4.6 million uniques a month, which is actually large compared to the unknown sites, but small compared to the known sites. Top headline on the right, Obama starts another war, sends troops to Africa. More anti-Semitism at Occupy Los Angeles. An essay I wrote yesterday is Obama, the Putin of America. The new prime minister of Iraq is looking like Saddam. You didn't know that, did you? All the men died for nothing, in other words. The missing missiles from Libya, guess where they wound up? Now, Libya, remember, is one of Obama's original wars, not a peep from the leftists in the gutters, the leftists in the gutters. And the Libyan war against Gaddafi, we're supposed to now be cheering for the so-called rebels when you and I both know they're radical Muslims. They're not going to be friendlier to America than Gaddafi was. And just as Soros money backed Carter and Brzezinski's think tank, which led to the so-called Arab Spring, it's all about ending Israel as you know it. I know this. I wrote about this. And the fact of the matter is Israel is the stubborn little country in the Middle East that stands in the way of the New World Order. And they want it toppled. If not toppled, with all of the Jews being kicked into the sea, which will never happen, they'd like it weakened sufficient. So the missiles that have gone missing in Libya have found their way to the Gaza border, just as old Carter and Brzezinski hoped they would, in my estimation. They wouldn't tell you that. After all, Jimmy Carter has a hammer, and he builds houses for the poor. He couldn't be involved in wanting anything like this. But unfortunately, sometimes the road to you-know-where is paved with good intentions.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So we have more businessmen wanting to become president than ever before. And it's astounding how they're attacking Herman Cain, former CEO of Godfather, snickering at him, laughing at him, using every racist slur in the book. It just shows you what liberals really are. Here he is, an African-American who made it his own way, worked hard, private sector, not for socialism, and they rip him to shreds. Irrespective of whether you think he's going to go all the way is not the point. The point is he's a fine man, and he deserves better. But they're lynching him electronically the way they lynched Clarence Thomas electronically. Am I the first in the media to say this? Herman Cain is a decent man. He's a good man. He's a very smart man with a real math degree in mathematics, which is a big deal, by the way, for those of you who majored in poli-sci. Trust me, a degree in mathematics and then a master's degree in something even more difficult is something real, as opposed to a degree in, let us say, women's studies or in environmental fictions. So Herman Cain is a good man. They're ripping him to shreds. They're trying to make him into a joke, joking about the 999. But everything is basically a slur on his ethnicity. At the end of the day, they're feeding into negative stereotypes about black males, which is shocking to me. It just shows you that liberals, how vicious they really are and how racist they really are, in how they go after any ethnic person who goes off the plantation. This would apply to a Jewish person who is not a liberal. They're also considered persona non grata in the liberal establishment. And God forbid a Mexican steps off out of the barrio, or a person of Asian heritage. Same exact thing. You ask anybody from those ethnic groups as conservatives what happens to them when they exhibit anything but socialist tendencies. And so they're comparing him, Herman Cain, now to, here's the L.A. Times. Is this the L.A.? Yeah, ABC News. Top five worst CEOs turned politicians. And they're comparing Herman Cain to other CEOs who failed because they're afraid of him. And the reason they're afraid of him is because he's a good man and he's also an African-American. He is, you know, the alpha and omega. He is the alpha to the omega of Obama. Everything that is bad about Obama as America's first so-called black president is good about Herman Cain. You understand this? If you ever confronted Obama without a teleprompter, the way Herman Cain's being confronted, this man wouldn't last 10 minutes. He is a sophist. Obama is a sophist. He's very, very glib, and he's an extremely convincing speaker. He's got a great voice. But, like all men, he's got his limitations. I do. You do. After all, a president is just a man by any other name. They're not gods. I mean, we don't live in Roman times where leaders are said to be gods. You know what I'm saying? So they're just men. And secondly, let's pull back for a minute. I don't like communism because of what it's done to the world. I don't like the amount of deaths it's caused on the planet. So I'm an anti-communist. My ancestors fled the Soviet Union, then Russia. It was before the Soviet Union, just before 1917, because they were getting out before the communists took over. So I understand what freedom really is. It means a lot to me. But the fact of the matter is, being a president is a very, very difficult job for anybody. Nobody can do this job right, especially in a nation as divided as this one is. This nation is so pluralistic. We may as well be a nation not of states, but a nation of tribes. We are like a nation of tribes, and we cannot agree on a single tribal leader. And the fact is that we're never going to have cohesion in this country, never. We never did, and we never will. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is another story. We are not a homogenous nation, number one. We are ethnically all over the map. We are culturally all over the map. And so, therefore, we have different views of the world. So none of the candidates will ever satisfy us. That's number one. But the same is true for China. If you actually, as Americans, were rather naive about China, we think that all Chinese are alike. We think that all Chinese are sort of a single homogenous ethnic group. Nothing can be farther from the truth. China is composed of numerous tribes that have been welded into a single nation. And that's why communism, in its mild form of today, and it is a mild form of the tyranny of communism compared to what was under Mao Zedong, which was an extremist, murderous form of communism, China wouldn't hold together a week if they had true democracy. It wouldn't last a week because of the divisions within China itself. And I'm speaking as an amateur student of history rather than a serious student of history, but I know enough to know that China would fall apart with democracy. And frankly, we're falling apart because this nation is divided. It's divided, as I just said to you, in all of those ways, and I don't want to repeat myself. So therefore, going back to the big picture of presidents, who is ever going to satisfy all of us? Nobody. Nobody. However, there are some who have done a better job at uniting us than others. And then there are some who have done a better job of dividing us than others. That's Obama. Obama, I would argue, having studied American politics for a long period of time, is the most divisive president in American history. And that is because, A, he's a fraud. He was never qualified for this job. And B, he's the first naked Marxist in the White House. And every time he tries to push some of his Marxism forward, his ratings plummet. He comes up against the stone wall of reality in America. The only reason you find some of this, let us say, incredible is because you're not hearing it anywhere else, by and large. Maybe on some other talk shows. I don't really know. But I spent a lot of time researching this. And so I wrote Trickle Up Poverty. It was a bestseller. It sold 250,000 copies in hardcover. It's now out in paperback. A lot of people read the book. There's a whole chapter on the Wall Street meltdown and who did it and why they did it and how they did it partly to elect Obama and how it happened. And now I wrote the novel Abuse of Power because I wanted the world to hear my story about being banned in England by illegitimi, the illegitimi non carborundum, Abuse of Power by Michael Savage. It's about a talk show host who's smeared by a liberal front group who wants to destroy conservatives. And that, it's a good novel. It's a fast novel. You know what I'm saying? So that's a little background to it all. Pittsburgh, Brian, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, this is probably my first time listening to you, and I have to say I love your show. I love what you have to say. You're such an educated man, and I admire you so much.
Well, how did you just stumble on the show? You were just dialing around and found it?
No, actually, a friend of mine who, you know, he and I talk about the whole presidency issue, and I have to say I'm ashamed to say I did vote for Obama, and it's proven that I wasn't as educated as I claimed to be. So, you know, I'm learning so much more,
I'll make a deal with you. If you agree to go buy a paperback copy of Abuse of Trickle Up Poverty, which is out in paperback, it's cheaper. I'll send you a free hardcover copy of Abuse of Power. Is that a deal?
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. I'd be honored.
Okay, you're getting a free hardcover copy of Abuse of Power because it's fresh, it's new, it's still on the bestseller list. If you promise to go buy a paperback copy, which just came out 2 weeks ago, of Trickle Up Poverty, which I hope will electrify America all over again with what's really gone on behind the scenes and how the Wall Street meltdown was orchestrated from the beginning. I'll be taking the next call in a moment here on the Savage Nation. Let's see, far London. Oh, here's a caller from London, Israel. I got calls from around. All right, let's go to Pittsburgh again. Jennifer, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I just wanted to talk to you about my most recent trip to London, which was last week.
What happened?
Nothing really happened. I just was very, very shocked at the fact that I was one of very, very few Caucasians, let's say.
Well, so you walked around and you saw the headscarves and the mufti walking around there, Londonistan, how Londonistan has been occupied by the Middle Easterners because of the liberals who broke the back of white England and destroyed England?
I mean, it wasn't even like you talk about, like, there are a lot of them, and I've never considered myself to be even aware of ethnicity, but it was so obvious that it was sad. And the same thing happened to me this past January when I went to Paris. I arrived at the airport, and same thing. I was one.
Yeah. In other words, where did all of the Frenchmen go?
Right.
Right. Well, look, if you live in a world of dreamland where you think that multiculturalism is a good thing, what you do is you bring in as many illegal aliens as you can, who generally have much larger families and generally much more likely to be on welfare than the native population and much less likely to be a productive citizen, as everyone knows. And what you do is you destroy the nation that way. This is what liberals do. They're like boll weevils. Once they get into a nation, they destroy it like termites. Look what they did to this country with the hordes, the millions of illegal aliens that they're trying to flood into this country. And ask yourself why the state of Arizona tries to stop the flood of illegals, the flood of drugs, the flood of crime, and the government takes the side of Mexico. Alabama passes a law to try to protect itself from the hordes of illegal aliens, the gangs, the overrunning of the schools. And what does Obama do? He comes out against the state of Alabama. So ask yourself what the federal government has become.
Well, Dr. Savage, I am Mexican, and
yeah, but you didn't come here. You didn't come here illegally, did you?
No, I didn't. My parents are legal, and I have the same ongoing argument with my whole family. Maybe someday you can devote a show to people like you and I and how.
Well,
we
here's the question. I'm the son of an immigrant, but if you're a nation of laws, you respect the law. If you come here illegally, you're breaking the law, period, end of story. And how the federal government takes the side of lawbreakers and doesn't itself get called up on the carpet for it is astonishing to me. But that's because they own the media. Otherwise, this wouldn't be going on. We are a nation of immigrants, yes, but a nation of legal immigrants, not illegal immigrants. Let me send you a gift. I'm giving them out all week. I don't think I'm going to be doing it much after they get a free copy of Abuse of Power. New York, we haven't heard from WR much today, and it's Friday. I don't know where everybody is in New York. They must be all occupying Wall Street. WOR, Bob, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Bob?
Hello, Dr. Savage. I wanted to tell you, my wife is a Catholic school teacher, 64 years old. She heard you yesterday reading the section of your book with the sex scene. She tells me last night when she gets home, my birthday's coming up next month, right? I want you to buy me this book. I got to read this book.
Well, if she wants you to buy the book because of the sex scene I read between Jack and the unknown woman, all I can suggest is that you get a few extra T-shirts as well. Well, I don't know. Did you hear me read that scene or not?
She did. She heard you read it. Yeah.
No, but I'm saying, did you hear me read the scene?
I didn't. Last night I was in a meeting.
Oh, then you don't understand that. You don't understand the joke. Why I say you need a few extra T-shirts. I'm not going to tell the joke again. But I will send you a free copy, on the assumption that she will let you read it as well. Okay, I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday.
You never want to quit.
So, in the waning moments of this hour, rather than beat you over the head with more of the scandals of the first Marxist administration in American history, I think I'm going to read little snippets of Abuse of Power, but I'm not going to do whole sections. I'm going to give you here's another one. So Tony and Jack are walking in the streets of San Francisco. I want to show you how well I write. And it's about a paragraph long. On Friday, Jack and Tony walked to Pagliacci's on the Wharf, one of their favorite restaurants, taking the long way up Columbus Avenue. On the way, they saw an old familiar face, Johnny Evans, retired SFPD. They nodded hello as they passed. When they were out of earshot, noted Jack, he said, married three times. Tony muttered, all brief wives. Jack said, brief wives once made the briefs rise. Now they fill the court's briefs with lies. See, now that's pretty clever writing. You got to admit, not nobody, but it's pretty good. It's very clever. It's called novel writing, and that's what you're supposed to do in a novel. Anybody can write these schmaltzy, overly sentimental, heartfelt, sitting in cafes, and my heart is breaking, the world is gone. Who wants to read that stuff? I'll read another short piece for those amongst you who don't like any sex between men and women, even in marriage. I'm starting to think that the people who object to the sex scene between Jack and the unknown woman would object to any sex at all, because I think that they're anti-sex. But sexuality is why you're here, Buster. Do I have to remind you? I mean, sexuality is good. Sexuality is fine. And they're not married. They're not cheating on anybody. They're both single, so what's wrong with that? So in the next scene, I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. It's about Tony Antonori and a woman named Beth Middleton. I'm not going to read the whole thing. So Beth was 30 years younger than Tony, but something about her was much older. Beth's father had been a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. He flew 100 combat missions in Nam in the F-4, a classy long-range MacBuster that was still being used in the Gulf War. The Sky Jocks always said that if you had to be away from home and honey, this was the baby you wanted to be with. Lieutenant Colonel Middleton apparently felt the same. He later became a flight instructor, keeping close to the Phantoms, married late and had Beth even later. She worshipped her father and craved his attention, which he obviously didn't bestow as readily or happily, as he did lectures on the range of his big silver bird. Beth didn't have to say it for Tony to figure out that he was the reason she was attracted to older men. He didn't imagine he was the first. After college, she earned her master's in Arabic language studies from Texas A&M, and after hours snagged a Ph.D. in MDS, Marquis de Sade. She liked to be dominated and humiliated, something Tony didn't know till later. Now, I'm going to stop right there, because the rest is probably going to embarrass people. There's nothing dirty about it. I mean, this goes on in the world, and if it's consensual, it's not your business. It's theirs. But I can't read it for you. But I'll read you another paragraph to show you how well-written this book is. The Levitra worked all right, except where it counted most, inside his head. This wasn't lovemaking. It was psychodrama. After a couple of months, he found the sight and feel of the clothesline she carried in her bag to be a turnoff. It had the smell of the recent past, but the less tangible odor of the distant past, the lack of attention from Daddy. That was something he didn't want to be a part of. I don't think that's bad. I really don't like, I don't know, I don't people why they criticize any, you know, anything to do with the human body. Except what, murder? The murder scenes are okay, the torture are okay, the shooting is okay, but that's not okay? I mean, that's part of life. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. That was very nice. I was reading about cell phones today that a good percentage of them in England have E. coli on them. I didn't want to read anymore. I'm sorry, I didn't want to go there. I don't know whether it's only in England or what it says about their hygienic habits or lack thereof, but the article came out of England. It said most cell phones in England, 6 out of 10, 8 out of 10, are contaminated with E. coli. I said, please, I don't want to know anymore. Stop. Please. When people talk about cell phones so much and it's so intimate part of their body and apparel and, you know, mine rings. Some people have cell phones that vibrate. Do I have to say any more? I mean, let's just stop right now, okay? But if you go to England, in other words, don't borrow your friend's cell phone. Let's put it to you that way. The fact of the matter is most of you have contaminated cell phones because your hands are dirty. You know that there's a psychological disorder called excessive hand washing? Who would write a thing like that? I come from a family where I was taught to wash my hands before eating. I'm appalled at barbarians who go and eat dinner without washing their hands or come in my house with shoes on. I mean, does that make me – do I need psychiatric care? How could you go in a restaurant and eat dinner after you've been in the streets of a town or a city and not wash your hands? I don't know. Of course, I can understand it with the Lavos Los Manos signs in the bathrooms today. You might be better off not washing your hands. Okay, I understand that. Maybe carry wipes of some kind on your hands. You can eat like food with your – because your hands are dirty, not from touching yourself, but just from touching things. There's E. coli everywhere. The moral of the story is, boys and girls, A, wash your hands before eating, and B, wash your cell phones with some wipes before you put it next to your ear. Right? I mean, what do you think? People don't get – you can eliminate a lot of disease in this world if you follow simple hygienic rules. You ask anybody who really understands the rules of medicine and health. How many diseases are transmitted simply by your hands and by your shoes that you bring into a house? Not all. That's like congenital illnesses. We're not talking about that or disorders of like cancer or what. And we're talking about commonplace illnesses that so many people get. Colds, flu, digestive disorders, eye infections. It's from dirty hands, dirty touching things. Now, why am I going there? I guess, I don't know, my mind drifts. What can I tell you? This is the Savage Nation. Remember what you learned this week. It's very important. If you missed any of it, go to michaelsavage.com and refresh yourself for the midterms are coming up very soon on the Savage Nation. There'll be midterms next week.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here are some of the news headlines from around the world and around the nation on MichaelSavage.com. From Israel, Iranian radicals look for a limited armed clash with the U.S. Huh, they're trying to provoke us, according to the Israelis. And why would they want to do that? Well, I'll let you figure it out. Apparently, the assassination plot against the Saudi ambassador came from the top. Khamenei's son, Mojaba, and al-Quds chief, Soleimani, read more. Obama opens two anti-Tehran fronts. Oh, really? The U.S. wants Israel to tackle Iran at sea. But Israel hangs back from striking Iranian Red Sea warships. That's terrible. U.S. on global alert for Iranian reprisal that may jeopardize Shalit release. Oh, boy. It doesn't end, does it? It does not end, does it? One thing after another. Well, what else is on MichaelSavage.com? Obama starts another war, sends troops to Africa. Now, I know that this is a humanitarian mission, supposedly, okay, to capture or kill the Lord's Resistance Army leader. However, what would the left be saying if Bush had sent 100 troops to Africa? Warmonger! Warmonger! All you Republicans do is start a war! But I said to you, a bomb with a D on it is a good bomb to these leftist slime. Journalism, terrorism, patriotism. Just how far up does the abuse of power reach? Read an excerpt and order your copy now by going to MichaelSavage.com. More anti-Semitism at Occupy Los Angeles. That's right, you don't want to hear about it, but it's there. But the vermin in the media won't even show you the attacks on Jews. I'll show you. Go to my website and take a look at the pictures. One picture of Jew haters is worth 1,000 vermin in the media.
I think this organic movement that has cropped up all over the country.
Let Jews control Wall Street!
This is healthy.
No revolution!
They are touching a nerve.
You greedy pig!
God bless them for their spontaneity. It's, you know, it's an independent.
Bourgeoisie won't go without violent means.
What we're seeing on the streets of New York is an expression of democracy.
Wall Street Jews!
We understand their frustration.
No, my friend.
We applaud their activism.
No revolution.
This is freedom. This is America. This is something we ought to celebrate.
These are the Jews! The Jews control Wall Street!
It's young, it's spontaneous, it's focused, and it's going to be effective.
No socialism!
Yeah!
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Savage wrote yesterday, as Obama the Putin of America. You didn't hear it? Read it. Here's a good news story. Euro-socialists in Obama administration defeated on key provision in health care law. Wow, they gave up on something, huh? What about Iraq? We liberated what? We got rid of Saddam, and who's there now? Well, according to the National Journal, take a guess what's there. They say Iraq's prime minister was once the great hope for democracy. Today he looks more like Saddam Hussein. You didn't know that? You don't want to know that. You're busy with Occupy Wall Street. Why occupy your mind with the truth? 1-800-449-8255. You don't want to occupy your mind with the truth? Another Soros link to Occupy Wall Street. Commie lawyer. Take a look at this picture. Commie lawyer threw himself under a police scooter in order to sue, and he's screaming. His big fat mouth, his big fat NYU lawyer mouth was open before he hit the ground, screaming, police brutality, as he threw his foot under the scooter. It's a shame that the scooter didn't hit his tongue. Missing Libya missiles find their way to the Gaza border to be aimed at Israel. Thank you, George Soros. Thank you, Jimmy Carter. Another inside man for the Solyndra scam artist at the White House. Take a look at him. Democrat marches with Communist Party USA members. Why the left fears Herman Cain. Federal court intervenes and suspends citizenship checks in Alabama schools. They want illegals in schools. Solyndra funder Kaiser, a billionaire, paid zero taxes for years. How Google tricked the IRS and saved $1 billion. Warren Buffett may owe $1 billion in back taxes. Are you shocked? What else is on MichaelSavage.com? Hey, did you see this? The Savage Nation is number two talk show on the internet. The way most people think is the way I talk, I said. Savage reads from the Abuse of Power book. Nice picture of me with the cowboy hat. Are the so-called celebrities supporting the so-called Occupy Wall Street group? Are they so-called heroes or so-called hypocrites? Drug smugglers tunnel into Arizona parking spaces. Three U.S. Muslims convicted in terrorism case. Ah, the North Carolina man. Principal bans Columbus Day. Maybe Thanksgiving is next. MSNBC analyst says protests need a Kent State moment. They want someone to get killed. What else is on MichaelSavage.com? Hippie parents bring kids to protests. I call it child abuse. All this and more today on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Have the Solyndra case, the green company that gets $500 million of stimulus funds and goes bankrupt. FBI raids them last week. Of course, that case will be swept under the rug since we don't come to believe there's actually going to be an investigation. Now, here's another one today for you who are still are true believers of hope and change. An Air Force general who oversees Air Force Space Command walked into a highly secured room on Capitol Hill a week ago to give a classified briefing to lawmakers and staff, and he dropped a surprise. General William Shelton said the White House tried to pressure him to change his testimony to make it more favorable to a company tied to a large Democratic donor. Big story. The FBI and House Committee are investigating a federal loan guarantee to a now-failed solar firm called Solyndra that is tied to another large Obama fundraiser. Now, the Pentagon is sending out alarm bells about a new wireless project by a satellite broadband company in Virginia called LightSquared, whose majority owner is an investment fund run by Democratic donor Philip Falcone. How do you like that? Some are saying, like Rep. Mike Turner, R. Ohio, there was an attempt to influence the text of the general's testimony and to engage Light Squared in the process in order to bias his testimony. Did you hear this? It gets even worse. So they try to tell a general to make it sound better for them. The White House confirms Wednesday that its OMB suggested changes to the general's testimony. Here's the Office of Management and Budget, which is supposed to be a sort of watchdog group, has now become a wholly owned subsidiary of Chicago. And they go to the general and tell him to change his testimony, too. But they say, no, it's standard what they do. So now they interview one of the CEOs here, another one. First, they mention one of the characters involved here. I'm sure he's innocent until proven guilty. Democratic donor Philip Falcone is a majority owner. Okay. Now, here's another name for those of you who are into names. You want more names? Here's another name. On Thursday, LightSquared CEO Sanjeev Ahuja, told the Daily Beast that his company was not trying to use politics to affect the regulatory process, and the firm's goal was to expand broadband access across America. I will not read you what he said because I'm not interested in what he said. All I can tell you is that nothing new is there's nothing new under the sun. There was a movie based on an Arthur Miller play. Since I grew up in literature, I know all of them. In the 50s, and it was called All My Sons. Some of you may remember it if you're older. I think Edward G. Robinson plays the corrupt government contractor. All My Sons was written by the great playwright Arthur Miller. There were great playwrights. There aren't anymore. I mentioned two already today, Eugene O'Neill and then Arthur Miller. Arthur Miller was a lifetime leftist, incidentally, and a great playwright, and he wrote a great play, many of them, Death of a Salesman, but he also wrote All My Sons. And this is about a manufacturer during World War II who makes cylinders for fighter planes, engines, okay? And he has several sons. And one of his sons becomes a fighter pilot in World War II. And because the father is a shoddy manufacturer and corrupt, He manufactures defective pistons for the engines in a fighter, and the kid dies. The engine fails, and his own son dies. So there's a famous scene between his surviving son, Burt Lancaster, and the corrupt father, the contractor. You got to hear some of this. Babe, we'll pull it for later on because it make your hair stand up. So don't think this is the first time in history that corrupt contractors have gotten government handouts. It's been going on a long time. Wherever there's money, there's going to be corruption. Look at what went on in Iraq. We still don't know where the money went. So there we go. There it is. Mirror early allegations in the Solyndra case, blah, blah, blah. And here we are. Mr. Ajuja gave a little more than $30,000 to both the Dems and Republican parties in the last 2 years. Mr. Falcone and his wife have given more than $60,000 in 09 to the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. Mr. Falcone has also given a smattering of money to Repubs. That's nothing. You see how the game works for $60,000, what you can get, if this is true? I told you, it's unbelievable what you get for your money. It's simply the best investment on earth is buying a congressman or a senator. I mean, people don't know what to do with their money. They don't understand there's no interest in the bank. They don't know where to invest. You don't have to be Warren Buffett and get an invitation to the White House and then buy Bank of America stock the next day and make $300 million the day after that. All you got to do is make a donation to a Democrat and tell them exactly what you want. Then you could produce cylinders that don't work. Blah, blah, blah. So now let's play a clip of Burt Lancaster from All My Sons.
What kind of a man are you anyway? Kids hanging in the air by those cylinders, and you knew it. Oh, I was so proud of you. You were helping us to win, and you were worried about your business. Don't you have a country? Don't you think about people? Don't you live in the world? Haven't you got a heart? Oh, what must I do to you? What must I do to you?
Now, that's what you call theater. That's what you call dialogue. In that case, it was a piece of a dialogue. That's what you call emoting. That's what you call something. That's what you call art. Instead of every minute another one with a gold tooth, with the pants on under his behind, with a gun. That's all rubbing his crotch. That's what they have now on HBO. That's a comedian today. That's a comedian and actor. They rub the crotch and have a ring in their nose or a diamond in their ear. That's America today. Since I am the most important media personality in America, since I know more about what's going on and have a greater grasp of the facts than anybody in the history of the media, I often get activists who work for the very opposition that I speak, who call this show and pretending that they're the average outraged man, and they try to disrupt the show by coming up with nonsense such as rules we never heard of or laws or this or that. What do you want me to just tell your family stories about Fat Al and Fat Al's tuna? What do you want me to just get up here and entertain you? Is that what you want, a comedian? I'm not going to be a comedian for you. You got a Russian revolution going on in the streets of America. And unless you understand who your enemy is, and unless you understand who's behind these rabble, you're going to lose everything you own. You don't understand what's at stake. I do. I have never been wrong about international affairs. I told you Jimmy Carter would disrupt the Middle East to the extent that the Muslim Brotherhood would take over Egypt. Was I wrong? I told you that just as the fools in the media like that thing, Anderson Cooper, that creature from West Hollywood who was excited because the boys of Egypt had tight dungarees and blackberries. He thought that they were good. They weren't good. This was orchestrated by George Soros's money. Jimmy Carter and Brzezinski were the architects of the so-called Arab Spring, which I said to you when it occurred was the Arab darkness, the Arab winter. I told you that. I was right long before anybody else was right. And if you think it's over in the Middle East, you're mistaken. They're burning churches. They're killing Christians. It doesn't matter to you because you hate Christians, don't you, all you atheists? But when they come for the atheists, who's going to defend you? Right now, they're coming for the Christians, but they're not coming for the atheists, but they're next. And it's the same in this country. You got to understand something. We are watching a revolution because we have a revolutionary in the White House. And he's not a good revolutionary. He's an evil revolutionary. He is a lifetime naked Marxist. That is my humble opinion, based upon his history, based upon the invisibility of his presidency, based upon the shady secret deals that he conducts every day of the week, based upon the criminality coming out of the White House, based upon everything I see. A man who refuses to show a valid birth certificate. A man who applies for college aid as a foreign student and then denies he's a foreigner. A man who has a social security number from a state he's never even lived in. A man who orchestrated the sale of murder weapons to Mexican drug cartels. A man who can be held in contempt of court, in fact, was held in contempt of court, Obama, for illegally obstructing oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. A man who requires all Americans to purchase a product from a third party, which is unconstitutional. A man who spent $1 trillion on so-called shovel-ready jobs and later admitted that there was no such thing as shovel-ready jobs. A man who abrogated bankruptcy law to turn over control of companies to his union supporters. A man who bypassed Congress one weekend to implement the DREAM Act through executive fiat, violating the Constitution. A man who granted a secret amnesty program that stopped the deportation of illegal immigrants across the U.S., including those with criminal convictions. Shall I keep going on? A man who demanded that a company hand over $20 billion to one of his political appointees and terminated America's ability to put a man into space. A man who encouraged racial discrimination and intimidation at polling places and refused to let the Justice Department investigate the Black Panthers. Shall I continue? I will continue because you're watching a revolution occur, but they are so skilled at what they're doing. They are so intelligent at their methodology that you don't even see it going on. It's as though it's occurring in slow motion. It's as though by sleight of hand, Obama and his communist cronies are inducting you into a state you will never be able to get out of.
Savage.
You know, you may not think we're in a shooting war with the Chinese, and thank God we're not. But some say we're in a currency war with the Chinese government. For example, you've heard about their efforts to manipulate their currency to gain advantage against our dollar, and yet our government seems to be helping them or doing nothing. Joining us now in the Savage Nation to discuss this is Jim Rickards, an advisor to the Department of Defense, the U.S. intelligence community, and global finance. Jim Rickards, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you.
You talk about currency wars. Give my audience, the Savage Nation, some information on what exactly a currency war is.
Right, thanks, Michael. A currency war is a very straightforward process where a country tries to create growth by cheapening its currency. So the idea simply is if the dollar goes down against other currencies, that makes our exports cheaper for them. So in theory, you know, China would be buying more Boeing jets or Germany might be buying more IBM computer services, and it's a way to generate jobs. It sounds good, but the only problem is there's no free lunch. It invites retaliation, so we try to cheapen our currency to promote our exports, but other countries do the same thing. They're trying to get growth, and they cheapen their currencies to promote their exports, and at the end of the day, nobody's any further ahead, except we've damaged world trade and launched a currency war, and the bigger problem is currency wars go very quickly into trade wars. And historically, sometimes they end up in shooting wars. So it's basically stealing growth from your neighbors by cheapening your currency. If that's all there was to it, if you could just do it and nobody else would retaliate, it might be fine. But the problem is the retaliation comes very quickly and it just gets out of control.
Well, how serious of a threat is this to the United States?
It's a very serious threat, and we go through this in the book. This is not the first time we've had a currency war. This new currency war started in 2010, but we had two in the 20th century. Beginning in 1921, the whole period of the 20s and 30s was one of successive devaluations. France and the Netherlands devalued their currencies against gold in 1925. England retaliated with devaluation in 1931. The United States devalued the dollar in 1933. And then in 1936, it was France's turn again. Well, what happened during that currency war? Well, that was the Great Depression. World trade collapsed, world productivity collapsed. So that was an awful outcome. Going ahead to the 1960s and 70s, that was another currency war, starting with England's break with gold and the U.S. dollar in 1967. And, of course, the famous episode 1971 when Nixon completely debased the currency by going off the gold standard, and that was followed by three recessions. Gold went to $800 an ounce from $35 an ounce, so the dollar in gold terms went down 90%, so that was a massive devaluation of the dollar. We had hyperinflation. And then finally, Volcker and President Reagan came in and sort of cleaned up the mess and put the dollar back where it belonged. So these were two of the worst episodes in U.S. economic history. So the answer is the dangers of currency wars are severe, and that's what I try to point out in the book. It's not just current economic analysis. It's also a look at the history.
Well, we all know we're in bad shape, but what would another global crisis do to the United States and the American economy? Cripple it?
Well, the problem is when trade contracts, jobs contract. So you try to get a free lunch, in effect, by cheapening your currency. But then the retaliation kicks in, and it could take many forms. It could take the form of excise taxes or duties on imports or exports. It could take the form of capital controls. But all these things get in the way of the smooth functioning of the international economic system. The real problem, Michael, is there's no anchor, and I talk a lot in the book about the gold standard, and it's a complicated subject, and you know I don't want to bang the table for gold. I think it's one possible way to fix things. Another thing I'd like to see is a strong dollar. But I don't think we're getting a strong dollar, not from this administration. They have a clear-cut, cheap dollar policy from, you know, Geithner, Bernanke to the White House and the people calling the economic shots in the White House. So we have a cheap dollar policy, and the only way really for average citizens to protect themselves from the inflation that's going to come from that is with hard assets, you know, whether it's land, gold, silver, fine art. There are a number of things you can do, but the danger is that basically we're going to destroy the dollar. The other thing I point out in the book, there's a major connection here to national security. This is not just an economic issue. The economic issue links to national security. How are we going to have a strong defense, forward-deployed forces, bases around the world, et cetera, if we don't have the currency to pay for it? So in the course of destroying the dollar, I think that Geithner and Bernanke are destroying national security.
Okay. In your opinion, what has the Obama administration done to make things worse?
Well, they've basically empowered Geithner. I mean, Geithner and Bernanke, with support from the White House, have given the green light to this cheap dollar policy. And just to kind of give you some specifics on that, in the State of the Union address January 2010, President Obama said it is the policy of the United States to double exports in 5 years. Well, that sounds good, but how are you going to double exports if you don't cheapen the currency? I mean, we're not going to get twice as smart. We're not going to get twice as productive. So the only way you can double exports is by cheapening the dollar. The problem is it doesn't work. Like I say, it sounds easy. It sounds like a free lunch or a cheap way to promote some exports. But once the retaliation comes in, it comes in the form of inflation. Think about the flip side. You know, we say our currency's cheaper, so that'll promote exports. But think of all the things we import. If we have a cheaper currency and we're importing, that means we have to pay more in dollars to get those goods and services from overseas. Well, that's inflationary, and then inflation takes off. It spreads throughout the economy. So it comes back to haunt you very quickly. So the Obama administration explicitly in the 2010 State of the Union address and implicitly by empowering Geithner and Bernanke and others are inviting this very destructive course. They just haven't learned anything from history. As I point out in the book, we've been down this road before, and it has ended disastrously, and this time will not be different.
So what can be done to avoid another currency war?
Well, I'd like to see the United States compete, but I'd like to see us compete with technology, entrepreneurship, innovation, education, and hard work, and all the things that have always served America well. Competing with a cheap currency, you know, the advocates of this, starting with Bernanke and Geithner, will say, you know, this will promote growth through exports. But it's kind of like saying, you know, if I steal your wallet, I'll be richer and you'll be poorer. Well, that might be true, but is that the model we want, you know, stealing growth as opposed to encouraging growth? Why aren't we doing things like, if you want growth, real growth, as opposed to fake money growth, we ought to eliminate the capital gains tax. We ought to eliminate the corporate income tax. Every economist will tell you the corporate income tax is completely inefficient. People say, oh, that's a gift to corporations. Well, no, it's not, because all the corporations do is they pass the cost along to consumers, employees, suppliers, and others. So corporations are just middlemen. They don't really pay the taxes. They just collect them. So why don't we get rid of that, you know, put the taxes down at the producer level. But let's compete with, as they say, you know, education, productivity, and innovation. The way to do that, get rid of capital gains taxes, get rid of the corporate income tax, you know, ease up on regulation. I'm not saying no regulation. Let's have smart regulation. I mean, we need to regulate the banks because they're completely out of control. But we can deregulate, you know, a lot of things that are being imposed on small business, the energy sector, and other sectors of the U.S. economy. So let's compete with innovation, not with a cheap currency.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on the China currency bill that just passed the Senate? Is it real?
Well, we need to take a stand, Michael. The problem is the Chinese are not kind of playing by the rules. It would be one thing if you had open capital accounts, free trade, free movement of capital and labor. If you had, I mean, that's sort of the ideal. We're not going to get to the ideal, but we need to kind of move as close to it as we can. And if the Chinese were playing by those rules, then, you know, we should not be looking at retaliation or doing anything. But the problem is They're not. They are not using a capitalist model. They have a model. The name for it is called state capitalism, or the technical name is neo-mercantilism. But basically, it looks like capitalism from the outside. You know, they have corporations, they have stocks and bonds and markets and futures and all that, and you can invest. And it kind of looks like capitalism, but it isn't really, because a lot of their publicly traded companies are majority controlled by the state, or they're controlled by Communist Party bureaucrats, or they take their orders from the Communist Party. So one way or the other, the state controls the whole thing. They control the banking system. They control the loans, the allocation of credit. I've seen estimates that they are stealing somewhere between $100 billion and $1 trillion of intellectual property a year from the United States. This is, DVDs and movies and Hollywood and software and books and intellectual property, technology, cyber warfare. I mean, they're ripping us off left and right. And so you can't just sit there and sort of take it. I mean, I'm in favor of free trade and open capital accounts, but they're not playing by the rules. So we need to stand up. We need to do something. I think Republicans are very ambivalent about this, because they buy into this whole free trade idea. Well, the free trade idea is a good one, and it's a powerful one. But when somebody's cheating, you have to stand up and stop it.
Where can we read more?
Well, the first thing, Michael, is, of course, I recommend the book. I do a lot of TV and radio, and I'm always happy to do so and help, listeners and viewers understand these issues a little bit better. But there's nothing like a 300-page book to really drill down on the issue. I've tried to keep it as interesting as possible. There's some stuff in there about the Pentagon. They conducted a financial war game in 2009. I was on the game design team, and I was one of the players in the game. I kind of joked with my wife. I got back. I said, well, I have good news and bad news. The good news is my team won. The bad news is I played for China. But the Pentagon's looking at it. The military and intelligence community are looking at it. They're taking it seriously. So I hope people get a lot out of the book. I also have a very active Twitter feed. My handle is at James G. Rickards. I welcome people to follow along. But I put out a lot on the international monetary system, and people can learn more there.
Jim Rickards, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, I hope your listeners do have the opportunity to get currency wars. It could not be more timely. It's kind of right out of today's headlines, but it also looks over the horizon, I think, gives investors and interested parties some view of what's coming ahead. And it's been great to talk to you.
This is The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Guy who wrote a book called Trickle Up Poverty, where I attacked Obama's policies, wrote a book that was a bestseller. It's just out in paperback, by the way. I'm not here to sell you a book. It's just brilliant. And I spent a lot of time on one particular chapter, on many chapters, but one was Nightmare on Wall Street, chapter 4, page 79, where I spell out for you the evidence that Obama was put in power by those who caused the crash of the banks in the year just before Obama was elected. And you say, well, wait a minute, don't you then agree with those who were saying that the banks are the problem? The answer is no, because you say banks. What do you mean banks? Not all banks are bad. Not all people on Wall Street are crooks. As I said to you, there's a good Wall Street, and then there's a criminal Wall Street. The Managed Funds Association, a group of hedge fund investors with whom Soros was affiliated, lobbied SEC Chairman Christopher Cox to have the rules changed. In my opinion, they did so to the sake of they engineer a raid on U.S. markets to trigger a financial crisis that they foresaw could turn the election in favor of their 08 candidate, Barack Obama. And the strategy worked. In the end, some believe that George Soros and similarly minded fanatics and financiers benefited in an extraordinary way while moving the country dangerously toward control by leftists. And despite this alleged manipulation of Wall Street and of the marketplace, Soros is free and active today. And while he's still denying his involvement in one of the greatest scandals in American history, that is, while he's not crowing that he had a very good crisis, I'm wondering why there isn't an investigation into this matter. Hundreds upon hundreds of minor players were also involved in this fraud as well. Another member of the MFA at the time was John Paulson, no relation to former Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, one of the architects of the TARP bailout. Remember Hank Paulson? Paulson saw the value of his hedge fund firm rise exponentially in 07 thanks to the rule changes that the Managed Funds Association lobbied for. And while he predicted the crash and the demise of Lehman Brothers and Wachovia, the real reason he was able to realize huge profits from the financial meltdown with the rule changes that he took advantage of to line his pockets. Paulson, like Cox and Soros, is still playing his trade, in my opinion. And in his case, a hedge fund trader. And so the fact of the matter is, there was a run on Wall Street. But not all Wall Street is the problem. Not all banks are the problems. All you've got to do is try to fix what Bill Clinton broke and what George Bush broke. And that is, you've got to override the gangsters in the hedge funds who bet against stocks. What hedge funds do is they buy stocks that they think will go up, and they hedge their bet by buying against certain stocks that they hope will go down. Now think about this. How can they make sure that the stocks that they thought will go down do go down? By manipulating the market. And that's why you've had such wild swings on Wall Street since the uptick rule was eliminated. And so, therefore, you are seeing gangsters in pinstripe suits who are busting out stocks in order to make certain that their bets are hedged. This is criminal behavior in the estimation of those who really know. This is allowed because old George Bush, permitted the uptick rule to be eliminated, which needs to be restored, in my estimation. I also point out what Bill Clinton did to favor some of the more daring members of the Wall Street traders, and that is eliminate Glass-Steagall. After the Great Depression of the 1920s, even the most uneducated in America still know about the Great Depression, changes were made on Wall Street to prevent wild speculation. I learned this in high school. Do you know that people were allowed to buy without putting anything down just before the crash of the 1928, I believe? People were buying stocks without putting anything down. So they were able to buy things they couldn't afford, and it crashed. They were speculating wildly. So the wise men after that period came along and they said, well, we're not going to let wild speculation on Wall Street to occur anymore. We're going to make certain that people, you know, buy the amount of stock that they can actually afford. And one of the ways they did this was put in a Glass-Steagall Act, which I spell out in much more detail in Trickle-Up Poverty. And it was in place for all of these decades, the Glass-Steagall Act, until old Bill Clinton, big old Bill Clinton, working to protect his friends on Wall Street, eliminated the Glass-Steagall Act. And by eliminating it, wild speculation occurred. And so as I say to you, in my estimation, as one educated American who has studied this in great detail and wrote a best-selling book on it, you need to take the Glass-Steagall Act and immediately reenact it, and then you've got to put in reenact the uptick rule. Those two things alone would straighten out the wild speculation on Wall Street and start to bring things into balance. I don't think this will happen because the lobbyists are too powerful. So in Trickle-Up Poverty, I ended with the Savage Manifesto, Borders, Language, Culture, and Economics. And it's a 38-point plan. English only, close the borders, defend the borders, defund and repeal Obamacare, reduce the size of government, liquidate TARP, oil for illegals, strike down anchor baby law, export jailed illegal aliens, fire Janet Napolitano, use profiling to prevent terror attacks, rewrite the rules of engagement, save the SEALs, reinforce the military infrastructure, give a pay raise to military personnel for active duty combat troops, impose tariffs on China, offer health savings plans. I go down the list. I'm not going to read all of them. But right near the end, point 32 in Trickle-Up Poverty, your favorite talk show host, Michael Savage, said reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. It's one paragraph. May I read it to you? This act, instituted in 1933, required the separation of commercial and investment banks. Its repeal in 1999 was one of the key factors leading to the breakdown of the residential mortgage investment sector. Senators John McCain and Maria Cantwell were proposing to reinstate it. This needs to be done while also eliminating Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Then point 33 is reinstate the Wall Street uptick rule. Here's what I wrote. We saw what happened when hedge fund raiders, according to one report, manipulated and rocked the stock market on May 6, 2010, causing a 1,000-point drop before recovering. This is why we must end the practice of short selling. The uptick rule must be reinstated while putting into place trading curbs. Congress and the SEC should conduct hearings and pass new safeguards to prevent the future meltdown, although this may be just a Band-Aid that masks the crisis du jour. Wall Street firms hire some of the brightest young minds, hand them supercomputers, then cut them loose on the exchanges. However, While they produce billions in revenue through their trading, they contribute nothing of material substance to our society. This pursuit of quick financial gain leads to artificial bubbles, inflated valuation of stocks, more crises, and in the end, the potential for widespread abuse, if not the end of the capitalist system, which enabled this country to become so great. Well, there it is. You've got institutions that can be controlled. And I say institute tort reform. Run the country like a business, not an empire. Get back to basics. It's all in trickle-up poverty. But you didn't want to buy it. You thought that I was just making it up as I went along. I have a real doctorate from a great American university in hard sciences, and I study the things I write about. And that's why I wrote Trickle Up Poverty. But not enough of you got the message. Not enough of you got the message. And unfortunately, here we are. It's much worse than it was then. So I decided to write a novel instead of a nonfiction book. I figured maybe people would like to read a story in which there are some politics.
Savage.